I'm glad all of you showed up here today. I'm told that you all serve the same God that my servant Daniel worships. Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews. You all know me. I am your king. King Cyrus the Great of the Persian Empire. But as you know, kings often go by many names. So here in the city of Babylon, many of you have known me by the name of King Darius. I want to share with you about that first night that I came to power here in the province of Babylon. Many of you were here in that city on that day when that miserable whelp Belshazzar came into power. He was a worthless leader. He was a liar, an assassin, a murderer. He stole from you, his own people, to make his stomach fatter. But even then, I was surprised on the night when the Persian armies surrounded the city of Babylon that Belshazzar's top general, Gabrias, came and defected to my side. Naturally, I thought it was a ruse. I thought it was a trick. But when Gabrias told me how Belshazzar had murdered his only son in a fit of jealousy over a woman, I could see the pain in Gabrias' eyes, and I knew he was telling the truth. Gabrias showed me and my men how we could divert the river running through Babylon, how they could lower the water levels just enough so that we could take a small group through under the gates. With Gabrias leading them and several of my best trained soldiers, they went under the gates of Babylon into the city, and Gabrias himself avenged himself against that miserable leader of yours. And you yourselves know, there was no longer a fight. For once Belshazzar was dead, you, former citizens of the corrupt Babylonian Empire, threw the front gates open, inaugurating yourself as citizens in the Persian Empire. Shortly after I came to power here, I knew there was much work to be done. You see, I am a king. I am a conqueror and a warrior, but I am no god. That's why I thought it would be good to appoint 120 satraps to take care of everything happening in Babylon and 3 administrators over them. This is important for a king, you understand. Sure, I could just tell you what I wanted you to do, and then I would have soldiers enforce that and force you to do whatever I said. But then there would be revolution. Then there would be rebellion. And the next would-be king who marched up to your gates, you would open the doors for him and welcome him in. No, I have learned as a king, give the people power and they will serve you well. And because I heard many of the Jewish people had been here for 70 years, since they came into captivity from Babylon, I thought it would be good to appoint one of the 3 administrators from one of your own people. Shortly after asking around, I found out there was only one man for the job, your man, Daniel. The only problem was he was old. He was an 80-year-old man. I was reluctant, but as he sat in my presence, his mind was sharp, and I could tell by looking in his eyes he was a loyal man who would serve me well. I placed him in control of the finances in the province of Babylon, and he served me well over those months. And as we dined together and as he sat at my table, he would share stories about his God and your God, Yahweh. He told me how Yahweh had delivered Israel from slavery in Egypt And how Yahweh had parted the Red Sea. He told me how Yahweh had given victory to the small Israelite army against the mighty Canaanites in the Promised Land. He even told me about how Yahweh, angry with you, his people, for their unfaithfulness, how he allowed Babylon to take them into captivity. Not that I believe it all. People tend to exaggerate their stories about their gods, don't they? But I watched Daniel as he prayed before every meal, told myself, my men, about this God. I was so impressed with his work as he brought money into the treasury. He was more faithful and more trustworthy than anyone I had known. He was the greatest administrator I had ever had. And I was so impressed, I was getting ready to make him in charge of the entire province of Babylon by himself. A few months into my reign, I was still having problems, as you know. There were minor skirmishes that would break up, and the people were divided and unhappy. And one day, as I sat in my throne room, one of the other administrators, Remus, came in. He was followed by some of the satraps, the other administrator, and he bowed low to me. And Remus said to me, "Oh, King Darius, live forever. I know the problems that you are having here in the province of Babylon and how the people are divided. I know what the problem is, and I have a solution." Of course, I wanted to hear what was going on. Remus said, "It's the priests. It's the priests, my lord. This one worships that god, that one worships this god, and the people are confused, and it creates conflict and tension." And I said to him, "What would you have me do? I won't take the gods away from the people, nor would I dare invoke the wrath of the gods for doing so." And Remus was humble. He was so very humble. He said, "Oh, my lord, make an edict. Make a proclamation that for a period of 30 days, the people shall only make prayers or petitions to you and not through the priests. All prayers and petitions will come through you, O King Darius." I saw what he did there. That way, any blessings that would come would be through me. And all the peoples, every blessing that they saw would come through me. But then I said, "But what happens if calamity strikes?" And Remus bowed. He says, "Oh, King Darius, with Persia in control, no calamity will ever come. But if it does, well, the people will know it's the will of the gods, and we know how they are. No blame will come to you." I thought about it for a long time. Remus and his people stood patiently, as I thought. This would solidify my power. So I agreed. But then I said, "But what happens if someone violates this edict?" And then Remus smiled. And he said, "Oh, why, we will have them thrown into the pit of lions." And then I smiled. I had brought those lions here myself. We use them for political executions and for sport. Those lions were more effective torturers than any man I could ever employ. So I agreed. I signed the document and I made the proclamation. I don't think the ink had dried on the parchment when Remus and his people came back into my throne room. And Remus said, "Oh, King Darius, have you not made a proclamation that no man should make any prayer or petition to any god except to you for a period of 30 days?" And of course I had. And then Remus said, "This man, Daniel, this Jew who you appointed as an administrator over the whole area of Babylon, just now, in this moment, we all witnessed him go up to his room and pray to this Hebrew God Yahweh. And I looked at the men with him and said, is this true? And they all shook their heads, yes. And then I thought a thought that no king, no conqueror should ever think. What have I done? Remus wasn't interested in solidifying my power, bringing my people together. He was jealous of an old man who was better than him and wanted to trap him. I know what you're thinking. You're the king. Why not just ignore the law? Why not make an excuse? Why not make an exemption for Daniel? You do not understand. No Persian king would ever go against a law once he put it in place. To do so would be a sign of weakness and idiocy. If I undid this law, the entire Persian kingdom would crumble as my power fell apart. No. I would not admit to weakness. I would not say that I have failed. I could not admit that I had been tricked. If I was going to save Daniel, I would have to find a legal loophole. My kingdom was worth too much. I had the best scribes and the best lawyers poring over Remus's document for the rest of the day. There was nothing. His document was too precise. It was too perfect. And then as I sat in my throne room, I watched as the sun dipped below the horizon. Remus and his people came in, and Remus reminded me, O king, no law of the Persians can ever be undone. So I said to my guard, go find Daniel. Have him thrown into the pit of lions. As I walked through the palace to the pit, I could hear my guards breaking into Daniel's room, and I heard the old man begin to shout, but then he was quiet. By the time I reached the pit, the guards had already rolled the stone away from the mouth of the den. And I looked in. And as I looked in, I could see their yellow, hungry eyes staring back at me. When I looked back up, there was Daniel. And that old man's eyes met mine. And I wanted to say I was sorry. But kings do not apologize. I don't know what he saw in my eyes. But in his eyes, I saw peace. I saw peace as he stood amidst the accusers. I saw peace as he looked at the king that he knew had betrayed him. I saw peace as he knew he would be thrown into the pit of lions and they would strip his flesh off of his body piece by piece and grind his bones to dust. I saw peace. I was about to say something, but the guard pushed him in. I heard a crunch. The soldiers immediately began moving the stone in front of the mouth of the den. I shouted in, Daniel, the God who you continually serve might rescue you. And then they closed it. Remus had chains drawn across the pit of the lion and their den, and he took hunks of clay and put them between the links in the chains. Without much thought, I took my signet ring and sealed it. No one was to open the pit until morning. Back in my room, I did not sleep. Remus tried to send musicians to my room, but I sent them away. Some of the other satraps sent some of the choicest foods for me to have, but I would not eat. I had sent an innocent man to his death to save my kingdom. I was the king of Persia, and I was powerless to save one old man. After a few hours, I knew that Daniel most uncertainly was dead. Most certainly he had died. I had seen the lions play with their food before, but after a few hours, they always bled out. Finally, I watched as morning came, and when the first sliver of sunlight light was on the horizon, I called my personal guards. We went down to the lion's den. I myself broke the seals on the chains. My soldiers moved the stone away. And I looked in, but it was so early. It was still so dark. I could see nothing. I listened, but I could hear nothing. Finally, I called in, "Daniel, has the God who you continually serve delivered you from the mouth of the lions?" And then I heard that old man's voice. And he said, "O King Darius, live forever. My God has sent his angels to close the mouth of the lions because I was found innocent. And against you, O King, I have done no crime. I had the very chains that were used to hold the pit closed, used to hoist up Daniel. And although it wasn't very kingly, I threw my arms around him. And I kissed the old man's neck. And he still had that look of peace in his eyes. And he looked well rested. I had my personal guards bring him back to his room. But I stopped one of them. I told him to gather several soldiers. And while it was still early in the morning, I marched with 12 men at my back through the city of Babylon, and we arrested Remus and all of his people. We marched them through the city to the pit of lions and threw them in one by one. I half expected them to starve down there. After all, the lions hadn't touched Daniel. Maybe they were sick. But as we threw them in, the lions leapt up, ripping the flesh from their body and grinding their bones to dust before they hit the ground. Do you know what I saw that day? Do you know what I saw? When wicked and evil men accuse God's people, God will vindicate his faithful followers. When wicked men accuse God's people, God will vindicate his faithful followers, just like he did Daniel. You, followers of Daniel's God, be faithful to him like Daniel was. No matter what the price is, no matter what anyone says to you, be faithful to him and he will vindicate you. And as you know, I, King Darius, made a proclamation to all of Babylon, to all of Persia, to all the people in all the world, that everyone should fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For Yahweh is the living God, and his kingdom will never come to an end, and he can perform signs and miracles which no other God can. And so that is why I, your king, King Darius, King Cyrus, have decided to allow you, the Jewish people, who have been held in captivity for 70 years here, to go back to your homeland in Jerusalem while under my care. Be sure to be faithful to your God while you're there. When you come against the wickedness, you will surely face.